First, I would like to spend a few words about the title. It was quite difficult to choose a title, as the origin of this new proposal was here, or Putin or Java, not Java. So anyway, the most controversial word is healthy. So let me explain what I mean by healthy. By healthy, I mean that the proposal doesn't have instabilities, at least with a rate of the bigger than the Hubble rate, than the Hubble constant. Okay, that it doesn't have a strong coupling scale, which is that scale, length scale, larger than the millimeter. Okay, and finally that the phenomenology can be okay. Okay, so that's what I mean by healthy. And so this is how I will present the work done in collaboration with Uriel Pujolas at CERN and Sergei Sibiryakov at Lausanne. So here there is a small outline of what I will present. First, I will present the general framework and in which way we deviate from the original proposal. Indeed, we don't deviate, but as we understand it, we generalize it. We build the most general thing. I will then go and analyze the degrees of freedom in the general case, so including all the subcases. I will present a formality which I think is very interesting, which is the covariant, or Stueckelberg, or well, there are many names for this formalism for this kind of theories. I will make two very first phenomenological tests, and finally I will give some conclusions. Anyway, as everybody in the audience knows all these things, I guess, so I guess that it would be quite easy to go through it. No?
You were not here yesterday?
Oh, yesterday I was.
I couldn't even see what happened yesterday.
So. Basic intro, yes.
You learned everything.
Yeah, the basic.
Yeah, in particular, you learned these three or four things, which is the original proposal that appeared at the beginning of this year. I guess you will agree with this.
So, this is a proposal for a theory of quantum gravity, which is power counting renormalizable. And to do this, basically, you break Lorentz invariance. Breaking Lorentz invariance means you break diffeomorphism invariance. And the way you do it is by putting a preferred foliation of the space-time, right? That tells you that finally the degree of gauge invariant that you have reduces to this foliation-preserving diffeomorphisms. Okay. From these three requirements, then you can write an action that, in principle, would reduce to general relativity in the infrared. For this, you just write general relativity up to a constant. That's the most general thing you can write if you really want to recover general relativity. And putting lambda equal to 1, okay, would be the desired limit, at least naively. And then you put new physics at a certain scale. Okay, this scale, in this case, in the original proposal, is Max Planck. Okay, well, there is a cosmological constant. I will not discuss this term. So if I forget this sometime, so that's forgive me. I will assume this is not relevant for our discussion. But this scale is important because in all these theories, what is clear that if we are having general relativity or something like general relativity in the infrared, the coupling constant has dimensions, okay? So there will be always a strong coupling scale, okay? So for instance, there was a paper saying that in this proposal I'm going to present, there is a strong coupling. Of course, there is a strong coupling. But where is the strong coupling scale? It's at 10, 15 GB. The only thing that this means is that this scale should be 10, 15 GB, okay? So if this is the case, then you have to reduce the scattering amplitudes or whatever, and then, in fact, if you have this scaling and those operators become important at 10, 15 GB, then the Max Planck is dimensionless, and in principle, a strong coupling can be absent. Okay, this is, of course, non-trivial. You have to do the proper, but at least there is a hope that this happens. I don't know if we all agree with that. Okay, so today there was a paper saying that in the proposal I'm going to present, there is a strong coupling. Okay. The strong coupling, the new physics. Okay, strong coupling means new physics. new physics at 15 GB. Not such a bad thing. So here it is, the extension we propose in this paper that appeared 2 months ago. And basically, it's the same thing, right? The same ansatz. But now we, instead of trying to get general relativity right, we write the most general thing. And the most general thing includes these kind of terms. So here I'm using the ADM decomposition that we are all familiar with. So if you want to satisfy these three conditions, this kind of term also satisfies it, okay? And indeed, this kind of term changes the dynamics in the infrared, okay? Because it is a relevant operator. This comes with two derivatives, and this is dimensionless. So this is a relevant operator that will change all the infrared, and in particular will make the infrared well behave in the set of healthy. They say this is not general relativity in the infrared. What it is your favorite theory, ether.
This extra term.
Yes.
So this ought to be invariant under the residual symmetries.
Yes, it is.
But I don't see immediately why it's invariant.
You want me to do it in the blackboard? For instance, for these kind of symmetries, okay.
No, this is okay, but it's spatial diffeomorphism.
This?
I mean, you're working in terms of the non-projectable. N is a function.
Any case.
Well, that's right. So N is a function of space and time.
Yes, N is a function of space and time. So you then you take the way it transforms under diffeomorphisms, you plug this in. And this is in mind.
So it's just a computation.
It's a computation, yeah. It's
kind of So why was this term not included?
I don't know.
In previous papers?
Because in the previous papers, N was only a function of time. This is what
right.
We caused
yes.
Exactly a projectable case.
That's true.
I was wondering if Silke is here.
She's in the back.
Yeah, okay.
Hiding.
So
yes.
You didn't have these terms, but I thought you wanted to do a general classification of all terms.
So our case was the projectable case, right?
Are you also thinking of projectable?
Because else we could, so when we reduced all the terms, the possible terms,
yes.
Right, we wanted to get rid of some boundary terms. So else we would have got more terms, even more terms. So our case is really only valid within the realms of the projectable.
Yes, in the projectable case,
then it's obviously
projectable means, coming from these three ansatz, there is a, you can fix N to be a function of time, and in this case, you can still have a theory invariant that is invariant. And then these terms are automatically cancel. There is ansatz.
We had a small discussion yesterday, and I'm happy to continue with it, whether the non-projectable case actually has a closed string algebra, because the main reason why I was focusing on the projectable case is that I know how to close the constraint algebra after a small number of steps. But in the non-projectable case, it always seemed to me that in order to close the algebra, I have to essentially add so many constraints that the theory turns topological.
Yes, that's a thing that may happen. But in the case with alpha different from zero, then it's not the case. So yeah, adding this term, if you want, is the cure for the non-projectable case. In this case, the degrees of freedom are standard degrees of freedom with two the standard algebra.
So you'll show the constraint algebra at some
point. Yes, I will show.
So it does close.
It does close.
I guess with this term, N is no longer a Lagrange multiplier. Because there's a quadratic term in previous.
I will go through it.
Oh, but you also said that you'll show a covariant description of this.
Yes.
So that
maybe we
should
get
Steve.
Yeah. Maybe you should.
Okay.
Can we postpone the discussion
yes,
at
yes.
the end of the talk?
So there are many.
I put in these terms in the quadratic part. Sorry, in the low energy, but also at high energy. So in principle, these kind of terms should appear in all the things you consider. The interesting thing about this is that you can recover basically all the subcases well, for the non-projectable original case, you put alpha to zero, and then this cancels, you are back to the previous Lagrangian. This limit is singular because you are reducing the, you want the number of degrees of freedom by this kind of limit, and there will be some denominators blowing up. Okay, that's the standard thing that happens. There is a constraint, goes to the denominator. If there is an extra degree of freedom, it blows up. So if there is one less degree of freedom, it blows up. But the projectable case, indeed, you can consider this kind of term and put the limit alpha going to infinity, and then this is like having a new degree of freedom, but with a very steep potential. And in this limit, it goes to precisely the point where this is zero. Okay, and this is zero precisely in the projectable case. Okay, so the projectable case can be at any point of the computation recovered once you put this limit. Okay, and this will recover the results by Visser and Silke and the collaborators. So the degrees of freedom for this generic case, as I said, you can classify the different operators that will contribute to quadratic order. Okay, let's see now the quadratic part, which is in principle simpler. So they are two out of dimension two. Okay, so the infrared is changed in the potential part. Okay, I separated. So the kinetic part, where the time derivatives are, the most general thing you can write is this. So now I consider the potential part, okay, where the spatial derivatives are. So the dimension two are these objects where AI is defined here. So it's just the derivative of the logarithm, if you want. And the rest of the terms with the new constants that appear in this case. If you now do it around Minkowski, for instance, the simplest thing you can do, and you focus in the scalar sector. Why the scalar sector? Because for the tensor, this is going to be just a small perturbation, in principle. Okay, the tensors, there are two propagating degrees of freedom, and everything you add can be small by putting the parameters small. Okay, so this is what I mean by this. So you concentrate on the scalar sector. You make the standard decomposition into SO3 irreducible representations. Substitute the constraints, and you get to a quadratic Lagrangian of this form. Okay, this is a normal quadratic Lagrangian with a kinetic part, a potential part. Okay, and here there's a complicated polynomial, division of two polynomials depending on these parameters. Okay, in particular, I emphasize alpha, okay, but the beta will appear here. And the interesting thing about this new degree of freedom, this means that there is a normal degree of freedom source. The equations of motion are second order in time, perfect. It will be Gauss free if this term here is positive, and absent of Taquian instabilities is warranted if this is positive too. Okay, so and this can be all met in the original by tuning or by finding the phase space where this happens with these parameters. Okay, so that's. In particular, if you go to very low energies, that's very interesting because at very low energies, this doesn't go to this goes to a constant. Okay, in particular, this constant to be positive, alpha needs to be in this interval, and this means that this is a massless or even a gapless mode. Okay, so this mode, the new mode in this proposal, so in the projectable case, if you want, and in the general case where alpha is different from zero. Is there from the ultraviolet to the infrared. Okay, it's always there. So there is always a general relativity plus something. Okay, if you manage to do this confined or something, that would be very interesting. Okay, that means, what would I put? Here, it's a gapless mode with a speed of light depending on the momentum, and in particular, it goes to infinity at very large momentum, and which at low energies just reduces to the standard thing. Okay.
The sound when alpha goes to zero?
Yeah, when alpha goes to zero, and the speed of sound, this blows up. I was going to say that. This blows up, that means that the phi is going to be, instead of being a question of motion, that the term is phi. In this algebra here, okay, in this algebra there are many steps in which there are denominators. You are solving the question of motion. Okay. Q going to alpha going to zero means that this blows up. That means that one of the equations, instead of being an equation determining its own degree of freedom, it is going to determine time. Okay, I say it here. Yeah, particular limits. As I was saying, I can easily take this limit after going to infinity, and then we recover these results by substituting Visser and by Fulton. And what we recover is that the speed of sound in this case is such that there is a tachyonic instability. Okay, this C squared is smaller than zero. That means, independently of anything, that there is a growing mode, okay, in this, in any background, because it's maybe for any soft enough background. Of course, this kind of instabilities can be absent either in new terms that come set in and cancel them. Okay, and indeed we have this kind of terms coming both from interactions or from other parts in the, so for higher energy, if you want. For the high energy part in the dispersion rotation. Yes?
Two questions. One is conceptual, one is technical.
Yes.
Why are you expanding around flat space? Especially if you are seeing an instability in some cases.
Yes, it's going to be around flat space or any small deviation. You're going to have this behavior in this case.
Right, so isn't that an indication that the true ground state, if it exists, looks different?
Yes, but the difference, as far as I understand, what you can do is take always like the okay, flat space plus something, like you want to call it background, and then you plug it into the action, and the effect of the background then is going to appear. Okay, this effect is going to be suppressed in this case by the scale of the new physics. So, as far as I understand, this means that the backgrounds for this is not going to happen are backgrounds which are very, very, say, not soft, okay? They are changing at very small scales, okay?
The technical question is, the psi mode that you have, is it actually part of the diagonalization of the kinetic curve? Isn't there some possibility of mixing with the
gravity
transverse polarizations? Because on the previous transparency, I didn't see precisely whether
decomposition was. No, I make the. I diagonalize.
Basically, skip the transverse part, but that was implicit in your calculation that you diagonalized first and then you got the.
Yes.
It does not show in the transverse.
No. I mean, this is less by construction. This mode is a. doesn't mix at the quadratic level with the transverse part.
If you go to quadratic order, you won't have any mixing. But at higher orders, you will.
A higher level.
mixing between what and what?
Sorry.
Mixing between what and what?
Between this mode and the tensors.
And the tensors.
Yeah. It will appear at the nonlinear level. At this order, they appear. I have to do the algebra.
You have to diagnose the.
I did it.
For that experiment.
And what you find is this.
That's
fine. What you find? Yeah, was a bit. When I find this mode, and then for the tensors, I find the standard general relativity plus correction, which are small. Okay. So, yeah, just to put some numbers. As I said at the beginning, I can admit
an instability as far as the instability is very, very, very small. Okay, in this case, it is an instability of the Hubble rate. Maybe we are at the boundary of disappear, but at least this is conceptually okay. But if I put this, like the rate of the instability, which comes from this kind of, okay, it will be an instability until these operators hit the dispersion relation, and that means that the rate is at least of this order, okay? And if you put this order of the order of cosmological constant, then you find this very, very small number, okay? So the deviation of lambda from 1 in the projectable case must be 10 to the minus 120, more or less. Okay, and then the problem with this number, okay, you may say, okay, this may be a fine tuning, but because this number is going to appear in the scale where non-linear operators are important. Going to be that the strong coupling in this case is going to be much larger than the cosmological radius. But this is a problematic theory. Okay, there will always be constraints on deviation from general relativity. But in this case, due to the instability, these are very, very, very strong. The non-projectable case, as you were mentioning, the problem in this case, so if I take all the operators I added to zero, then the denominator here blows up. This means that there is a singular limit. If you make the algebra, what you find is that instead of having an extra mode, what you have is only four initial conditions. So apparently, you are very happy and you say, well, this is just the same done in general relativity. But this is not the case, because this is an artifact of the linearization. You are doing Minkowski of quadratic order, and this is very weird. You break gauge invariance, okay, which you use to kill degrees of freedom, and you get the same number of degrees of freedom. So it's a very strange situation. That's why we started all this business. And what we did, one of the things we did, was trying to do the algebra. Yes.
I think when you get the decay rate, I mean, you said P equal N prime.
Yes.
But I think that the second term dominates the first term, yes, much earlier, because the first term is smaller.
So you say that this kind of term will come before?
Yeah.
OK, but then the thing is that this kind of terms also parameterize the deviation in the tensor mode. OK? So imagine that you put, so you can put mass Planck to then a particular coefficient here, but then you have to take into account that this coefficient is also going to be important for the tensor.
No. I mean, when the first term is small, the second term becomes important earlier than in prime.
Yes.
But you,
that's a strong coupling.
Yeah, but strong coupling is okay if the extra degree of freedom is decoupled from the rest of the world,
yes,
like by the same effect.
Yes.
Right. Also, I think that in the expanding universe, that if the Hubble parameter is larger than the, I mean, decay rate, it's okay. I mean, suppose we have a, we are interested in some scale F,
mm-hmm,
and the decay rate is something like one of CS, I mean, CS divided by F, right? One,
yes,
over F in the.
Yes. What I say is that whatever scale you put, this number is going to be quite small, okay? And you must be careful because the scale you are putting it is also going to appear in other parts of the quadratic Lagrangian, in particular in the tensor modes. Okay? So there is no, at least, yeah, I agree with you that you can put this, you can make me a bit more, you can do this a bit better, but no, my claim is that you cannot do it in a way that everything is okay.
Way to await this condition. So in the projectable case, you have kind of dark matter.
Yes.
And dark matter, develop instability, gene instability.
Yes.
And gene instability is good instability.
Yes.
And if the time scale of gene instability is faster than this,
yes,
then we don't see that kind of instability.
Yes.
So that if the background, energy density is not zero, then we have a gene time scale.
Yes, then we have to analyze the same thing, right? You take this instability, you see what happens with this, you see what happens with the nonlinear terms, and you put some bounds. What I think is that the general picture is that in any of these cases, the bounds of the parameters are going to be very small, but we can discuss afterwards. I tell you. Okay, so
going back to the nonlinear degrees of freedom. We just took the most general action we wrote at face value and computed the equations of motion. So we have four constraints, one coming from the variation with respect to the lapse, and three coming from variation with respect to the shift. These are similar in principle to general relativity, but the thing is that this constraint is not related to a gauge invariance. Okay. This is just, sorry?
Yeah. Those are
related to the remaining gauge invariance, but this is not. In particular, if you take alpha and beta to zero, well, and then, there are the dynamical equations. Okay, that's the same as in general relativity. So what we can do is we have still the gauge freedom to fix an I, the shift to zero. Okay, once we find the equations of motion, we fix it to zero, and the remaining data for the Cauchy problem is 13 variables. This is, so there's one coming from here, 6 and 6, 13. In the generic case, so where alpha and beta is different from zero, and also in the when alpha goes to infinity, in particular, so in the projectable case, this constraint fixes n. Okay, so n appears only in this case, otherwise it's a Lagrange multiplier, and it's fixed by this. But it's important that there are only three residual gauge invariants in this case. Okay, so the residual gauge invariance is the fact that once you have fixed ni to zero, and you take the gauge invariance of the theory, still you can play with the initial conditions for the gauge parameters, and you can kill three extra degrees of freedom. And what you find is what we found in the linearized analysis, which is that there are six initial conditions. Okay, so four for the tensor mode, and two for this psi scalar. If you take the same thing and do it for alpha equal to zero, for this non-projectable case, then what you find is that this doesn't fix n. N remains by these constraints, n remains free. And of course, what happens is that this constraint is not conserved. So you take the time derivative, you find the secondary constraint, and with the secondary constraint, you fix n. Okay, so you have, again, 13 initial conditions, one extra constraint, so 5, and then minus 3, you have 5 initial conditions. This is very weird, as you were mentioning, or other people mentioned, because typically, for bosonic degrees of freedom, the phase space must be even. But in this case, as you are breaking Lorentz invariance, and as we will see, this only will be important for certain backgrounds. This is the way this puzzle is resolved. Okay. So again, the message here is that there is a clash with the analysis of Minkowski's quadratic order, which was the thing we were doing before. This means that nonlinearities for this new mode are essential. So all the dynamics of this new mode comes only from the nonlinear part. And this means that you cannot say anything of quadratic order, strong coupling of very, very large scales. Okay, that's the problem of the non-projectable case. And to see it more concretely, I take the secondary constraint, so this is the derivative of the Hamiltonian or super-Hamiltonian constraint, and what I find is this equation that, as I said, for lambda different from 1, fixes n, okay? There's also the other contribution here that, okay, I will for the moment neglect. So what I do is take the equations of motion now, make the linearization, and go back to the previous image, so the linearized image in which both contents should match, to see what happens, right? Because there is a mismatch. So I take a generic background, okay, like take the extrinsic curvature to be something generic plus a perturbation. So here the indices are missing. The lapse to be something plus a perturbation, okay? We tried to find these backgrounds, but this was impossible. I mean, it was very complicated to find backgrounds with this different from zero. So, for instance, Minkowski doesn't pass this test, Schwarzschild, Freeman-Robertson-Walker. All the backgrounds we work with typically has this piece equal to zero. But of course, this doesn't mean that there is no a small contribution from this, right? So in principle, you take that there is the background with some small deviations, and you expect that the deviations will have a small effect.
Saying the background Kij,
Kij zero? No. Yeah, here I mixed it a bit, sorry. I think I generate background, I forget about this. In principle, okay? Now, here I should say that this is the first situation I can have. Let's imagine that I put it to zero, okay? And this happens in Minkowski, the Schwarzschild, the sitter, and the sitter, the Freeman Robertson Walker, basically, because this has to have derivatives of the time derivative of gamma ig, okay, and this is typically zero in all these backgrounds.
Why does it vanish in Friedman Robertson Walker? And for W, you have to not manage.
But gamma ij is zero in this case.
In for W?
Sorry. Okay.
K is just H, L, G, I, J.
Sorry?
K is just H, G, I, J.
K, yeah, let's take it to it. Yeah, it should. Yes. Okay, it doesn't cancel. I agree with you. But what is going to be important is going to be this. are going to be. So this should they pass. I do not support the best way. So let's see why. So basically, because if I expand around, you see here what happens. Here I have the derivative of this, of the trace of this tensor. And when you expand a linear order, if this is zero, the part with linear in length is not going to appear in this expansion. Okay, that means that this constraint that this bill or it appears fixed n, in this case where Kij is, well, indeed, when Kij is, of course, is a function of time, just changes role, if you want, from being a, something that fixed n, now it's going to fix k. But k was a degree of freedom in the previous units, if you want. So it is, this is an, if you want, over constrained system. Okay, so there's an extra thing that happens only a quadratic one. Yes.
I think it could again indicate that if you want to expand around a static background and move that from that background, that's
yes.
Exactly about the constraints of the system,
yes.
That's about the,
but
the consistency of the solution around which you're expanding.
I agree. So I agree that this is telling you that the solution around your expanding is not consistent. And we're going to see that.
If you take up and close FRW, is it zero as well? If you take up and or close FRW.
Open or close?
Yeah, if you don't, if you take some flashing property.
I think that this is a CTO. Sorry. As far as it's homogeneous, this is a zero. Yeah, because if this, yeah, let me be complete. If this is proportional to GIJ, this is the combined derivative is zero.
Shouldn't the second order constraint be automatically satisfying the projectable case?
Like automatically?
Yeah.
No. Why?
Because then the algebra closes, most of the algebra closes. And so, confused by the fact that.
The second order constraint is satisfied automatically if there is a gauge invariance.
Yeah, and
but
in the projectable case.
Ah, in the projectable case. Yeah,
so
this is also non projectable.
Yeah, yeah, but it means that your constraint should always. Here your constraint is proportional to n.
In the projectile case, there is no secondary constraint. Because in this case,
yeah.
This just fixes this function.
Yes, but I'm looking at your, if you go back to your constraint, it
yes.
Seems that there's a term proportional to n in there, which does not vanish. I mean, all terms should be proportional to derivative.
No, but, okay, sorry. This is the, I wasn't fast. This is the secondary constraint in the non-projectile case. The alpha was zero, so there's
yeah.
No alpha. You cannot take the limit from the projectile case in this case.
But even there, if you take n to be space independent, this constraint should be automatically satisfied.
Well, just the integral of the. You get the integral constraint.
Yes,
the integral constraint. Because you have only the zero mod of n. Local constraint doesn't appear.
Yeah.
Well, which is, yeah, which is a way of saying what I'm saying, but this constraint should be satisfied. There should be no view constraint. You're just confused by the fact that it looks like even if n.
Yeah, I think that's what you are discussing is, for me, it's better to see in this case, okay? Okay, let's take the predictable case, which is alpha going to be. That means that this equation sets f to zero. And that's all. If you take the derivative, it means the derivative of this function will be zero, but it is also zero. So this fixes, it doesn't fix anything.
Yeah,
maybe it's a different way of working.
Just integrating in this over space, so your constraint in the next slide, then you have a total derivative which yields the zeros.
The constraint should be a function of DIN, that's what I'm saying.
No, but what he's saying is it's actually an integral.
It's an integral.
So integrate by part, and you get the expression.
It's a total derivative.
Because it's a total expression.
Okay, so we are happy. So that we, as we were saying, these kind of backgrounds are pathological. So what we did was try to, for some time, trying to find a background where this doesn't happen, so where this is different from zero. We didn't really find it. So we did, so okay, so let's make some computation, just assuming that this background exists. It doesn't exist, of course, because you can put this in the conditions, in the conditions. We take a background with a certain curvature, okay, which is parameterized by L.
Are you looking for a background that satisfies the equations of motion and the constraints and has and doesn't satisfy that?
And has these differences.
But I mean, that's not possible because, I mean, that equation on top there tells you that K must be constant.
Well,
because, I mean, that's essentially Laplace equation or elliptical.
This?
Yeah.
No, but N is the numerical case. N depends on time.
But it doesn't depend on
space.
That, but any, on any spatial hypersurface, say if you have, it's a closed or you have some fixed zero boundary condition, that equation tells you K must be constant.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter what N is. So independent, I mean, that explains why you cannot find it, because for any N, that's essentially, that's like Laplace equation. And
I don't know this equation is also true. Maybe I'm wrong.
But I don't think that's the right thing to think about it. It's,
they dispar. In the projectile case, I agree. In the non-projectile, they dispar. So you have to play yourself.
So we can argue about this data, but I'm cramming for any N, that equation with fixed or closed boundary condition, that equation tells you K is constant, K is zero basically, or constant.
I don't know. I mean, if I take N and I don't know anything, for instance, a wave.
But it's not a local, you cannot say it locally, it's a global, it's just uniqueness theorem for elliptical equations. That, okay, you fix the boundary conditions, that's an elliptical equation, that tells you K must be found.
Yes. But
what you're saying is take that, multiply by K, integrate over everything, and you get an integral of del K squared equals zero.
No, I'm saying, so there's uniqueness theorem for Laplace equation, because if you fix boundary conditions,
yes,
you fix the solution. And I'm saying that's just a generalization of that unique theorem. So it doesn't have to be exactly Laplacian, if it's just gradient of a constant.
But this is not true. I mean, okay, that may be true, but then you are excluding by boundary conditions a whole family of solutions that can happen. Like, for instance, a wave. So you don't admit that anything goes to infinity in your solution.
There is a boundary condition issue. But say if you have a closed spatial hypersurface, then for example, I'm saying that the only solution is one where K is constant.
Yes. Yes. I think that it's difficult to consider that this kind of boundary condition should also be realized.
Sure.
In this case, yeah, I agree. Maybe there was a way to find it to change the boundary condition. But still, I think that this is. These will be physical solutions, okay? It would matter for after all. So in this case, we started perturbations, as I emphasized. There will be two polarizations corresponding to the
transverse and traceless part. And there will be a new polarization, which is very weird. Has an energy much bigger than P, okay? And it has satisfied a first order differential equation, so the phase space is odd. And it has this dispersion relation here. So it depends very, very non-trivially on the background you put. Okay, and in particular, just by order of magnitude, it goes like something which is very big, because we assume that the frequencies we are analyzing are very small with respect to the background. Okay, so this is very big. So omega is very much larger than P. So this is one, it's a wave with a very, very high speed. Propagation. Okay, and this fixes the. I think that this fixes the puzzle. So indeed, you have the same amount of degrees of freedom in both the linear and non-linear case, but certain backgrounds are pathological. Okay. So let's move to the circular formalism or covariant formalism. Yes.
The assumption cannot be satisfied because Kappa must vanish by the argument, and this could very well be consistent with what I was saying earlier, that perhaps the only way of quantizing the not predictable case is to turn it into the logical, which doesn't have any property.
But this would be very bad for, it would be okay with the...
It would be bad for the not predictable case.
Okay, perfect for
you. It would be bad? Why is it bad?
Well, not necessarily.
Yes, I agree. But anyway, this is non-trivial, let's say, put it like this. Okay, and so this case is
for the time being, I will see that pathology. Okay, like it's a weird case in the whole family of Lagrangian we can consider with alpha going from 0 to infinity. Okay, and this limit is very pathological in this level.
I just want to comment. There's an ancient paper by Eisenberg and Nestor. Do you know about that? On general relativity coupled to tensor fields,
okay,
where similar phenomena to change of number of degrees of freedom depending on the background you're expanding around and singular or not, and all that stuff arose. And it's a big long paper, but purely in a covariant formalism. It just seems like it must be very related to this.
Maybe, and I'm going to go to the covariant part.
Just coupling of
it was quite a general analysis of just coupling tensor field matter to general relativity. And it's a long paper. I think it might be in Annals of Physics.
Can we cut off the discussion?
Anyway,
where this happens is in massive gravity. From more recent papers, like myself, at least. In massive gravity, this is a known phenomenon. So you were mentioning VDVC discontinuity. At the linear level, you have like a kind of accidental symmetry, if you want, around certain backgrounds that kills a degree of freedom that otherwise appears. And there is some way of taming this degree of freedom, but here it doesn't seem to be the case. Still, now it's strictly formalism. By this, I mean the covariant formalism. And to do this, what we do is we add what is missing in the original assumption, which is the foliation freedom. Okay, in the original assumption, you do have the foliation, which is fixed. Now we add the degree of freedom corresponding to the foliation, and we build something which is covariant. Okay, here, this degree of freedom is dynamic. So we are the dynamical degree of freedom. We add the gauge invariance, and they are added in a way that then we can go to a certain gauge, to a certain foliation, and recover the original result. This is perfect. I mean, this cannot be debated. And must be computed. I mean, it's not trivial that when you add new degrees of freedom, and which are related to a new gauge invariance, you're going to recover the old result. So this is something that we did, and it happens to be the case. So now the surface of the foliation with a certain subtlety that I will mention. Now the surface of the foliation, now there were p equal constant, now they are rho equal constant. That means that this must be a time-like, the normal of this surface must be time-like. This kind of symmetry, p going to f of t, the parametrization of time, now promotes to rho, the new scalar going to f of rho. So this is a very weird, or not weird, but a very precise symmetry that will have to be included in the Lagrangian we add. Of course, the derivative of time is not promoted to this kind of normal to the foliation, right? The point is that any three-dimensional object now can be promoted to a covariant object. And the original action that we wrote can be written like general relativity, okay, plus two terms, okay, in the infrared, two terms, which are covariant, and which are just something that can be understood as scalar field. That is the power of the covariant formalism, that all the new physics is really encoded in these two new terms, okay? And this allows you to focalize, for certain problems, to focalize in these terms, in this mode, in this, within this framework, and be able to do very complicated computations in the other formalism. Okay, this is the standard thing with Goldstone's also in, you make WW scattering, whatever. You introduce Stueckelberg, you can read the cutoff just by the Lagrangian. Here also you can read the cutoff by the Lagrangian. Okay, otherwise you have to make very complicated gauge. So there are many things having to do with gauge invariance that are not easy to deal with. Okay, so that's the clear advantage of this formalism, that it's general relativity plus a scalar. And the scalar is going to break Lorentz invariance in the infrared and in the ultraviolet. Okay, and this is basically ether theories, but with only one degree of freedom in the vector.
DT promotes to U dx. So dt, but u is a unit vector, and dt was not a unit one form.
This is. No.
So that's just.
Yes.
NDT.
Is that?
NDT, yeah. Yes. It has to be the unit vector.
And you say it's just the ether. So if you just assume that u has this form and plug it into the most general ether Lagrangian, do you get only these terms survive?
Yes. In the ether, you have form, right?
Yeah.
But because there u is a general vector, if u is a foliation, is a normal to a foliation, two of them are the same. That happens in, yeah, we can do it.
I know that one goes away. It's the other one that I'm surprised by. But maybe you can explain it to me later.
Okay.
And K is just a trace of that K defined.
K, before we have the three-dimensional object, now we have the point is that any vector cannot, any tensor cannot have a covariant expression. Okay. Indeed, this is the most general thing you can write. With this kind of symmetry, okay, or invariant, this is the most general thing you can write, is you only want two derivatives in time of this mode.
And this is very important, this transparency. Now we completed the equations on motion. We have 10 in principle coming from the metric and one coming from this new degree of freedom. Okay. Of these 10, 4 are going to be constrained. Okay, the ones we wrote before. They are one Hamiltonian constraint and 4 momentum constraints. In particular the symmetry coming from this new degree of freedom is going to be a covariantly conserved current because it's related to this Gaussian invariance, to the invariance, and with a particular property. Now we have these degrees of freedom, and we go to different gauges. As I say, it's very non-trivial, or maybe it's trivial, but you have to do it. You go to the unitary gauge where this degree of freedom is fixed. Okay, we put it to be the surface that we wanted before. Okay, and we see what happens with the degrees of freedom. And in this case, what before was an equation of motion now is going to be a constraint. Okay, so this from the algebra or the constraints now is automatically there, of course, because this is a covariant theory and the algebra must close. And now it's important to see that there is only 3 residual transformations once you fix this gauge, not 4. Okay, typically in general relativity, as I'm going to say here, you fix 4 components like N0, NI to something, and still you have 4 more residual transformations to fix the initial conditions. Here, no. Here, if you are choosing this kind of gauge, okay, where a scalar with a certain time, then if you see which kind of transformations allow this gauge, this is fixed. Is that clear? So that means that once you make the counting, there will be an extra degree of freedom in the metric. Okay, not here. I think that this is important for the Cascaton.
Where does that current come from? What is the symmetry that gives you that?
This is the parameterization invariance. P going to pi plus A. It's like a dilatory invariance.
But that's a global symmetry.
Right? Well, but you can make it local. Okay. In any other gauge, there is 4 residual gauge invariance, but the problem here is that if you compute the equations of motion, in this case for the mode, there will be higher order in derivatives. And it was very puzzling for us because it was like a mismatch in the number of degrees of freedom. And the solution of this puzzle is the following. The foliation should be preserved. I mean, even if you covariantize, the theory is not really covariant. There is a preferred foliation in which if you formulate the Cauchy problem in this foliation, this equation is first order. Okay? So everything matches. So it's a covariant theory, if you want, but with a preferred Cauchy foliation. To see it in this gauge,
in any covariant gauge you want is very complicated, because this is a very nonlinear sigma model, and for any perturbation you have to go and study it, right? So we did that first order, so what do? You go to the other gauge and formulate everything in the other gauge if you want to make this kind of computation, okay, which is highly non-trivial. Now let's go to instability and strong coupling in the last 3 minutes. As I said, the good feature of this kind of formalism is that all the new physics come in these terms. That means that all the if you consider the linear action for this kind of mode, it would be multiplied by m Planck squared by this parameter, and the interactions would be suppressed by this scale, not by m Planck. So in this kind of formalism, gravity is suppressed by m Planck, so and the new modes are suppressed by these scales. Okay, that means that if this scale is very small, the interactions of this new mode come before. Okay, so this is the strong coupling problem. And in particular, this is going to happen because this delta lambda is going to be small just by phenomenology. So we study this decoupling limit in which we take m Planck going to infinity. That means that gravity is purely linear, if you want. But this new mode is not. Okay. So in particular, if you assume the current bounds on scalar tensor theories, this should be of order 10 to the minus 7, 10 to the minus 5. I don't know. Anyway, this new scale is much different from Planck mass. And you can study perturbations and nonlinear corrections to perturbations in this limit. Okay? Only, so if you want, this would be the nonlinearity that will hit first. And if you do it, and we did it, what you find that for a generic background, as we were all mentioning, in the non-projectable case, there are instabilities. Okay? And this page, we recover what we had before, so this kind of weird dispersion relation, but then, in this limit, we can study the next contribution, and it is a very fast instability. That means that these kind of backgrounds, also with a small curve, with the deviates very slightly with respect to Minkowski, decay almost instantaneously. And even more, what happens is that if you compute the real cutoff. In this case, so you really go to this kind of Lagrangian around the solution, which is very close to Minkowski, but not Minkowski, you see that the cutoff, so the scale in which you need new physics to be present, must be proportional to a power of the curvature of the background, and where the curvature goes to zero, this blows up. That means that the scale at which you have to put new physics, okay, coming from the infrared, so in which general relativity is going to be modified, is basically cosmological. Okay? And that's the problem of this non-projectable case. For the projectable case, I'm going now very...
Can we finish?
Yeah, because I have a few minutes. For the projectable case, the problem is already seen at the level without having to introduce this particular formalism. There is a very, very small sound speed because of the instability, right? From the instability, we learned up to subtleties that this would be the scale of the parameters. That means that once you go and compute the next contribution to be the first nonlinear contribution is going to be important at this scale. And this is, I think that this can be admitted as a theory of quantum gravity.
So, can I ask one about it? So that piece can be removed with a Fourier definition, right? So it's
not up. Well, I put it just schematically. It has been computed on this particular case. So there's something concrete.
It can't be removed with
Fourier. That cannot be removed. This was done by these guys, Rosari. And we did the same computation in this decoupling limit, and we also find this kind of couple.
I'm just slow.
Can we definition and then
I just want to ask him to restate the conclusion of this slide. Are you saying that the projectable case has an extremely low strong coupling scale always?
Yes.
Around any smooth value?
Yes. I see.
Unless
nothing.
Unless it's GR.
So that's what I have this couple of transparencies. So at least my understanding, and there's no weird about this, nothing weird. There is a whole family of still good theories in which there is this anisotropic scaling, and in which the infrared is really modified. Okay, and this is what, and with other strong coupling problems and without the instabilities. And now, these theories are will prove.
The new physics is given by a scalar field, okay, that is kind of ether, with a certain particular invariance, and yeah, that's for it. And we made the first phenomenological test, very trivial. I mean, this, of course, this is nothing because we have to do many, much, much more. It's quite interesting that we have, even if we have a scalar field, when you compute light deviation and planet orbiting, there's not going to be a difference with respect to general relativity. This is weird, right? Because in a standard general relativity, with Lorentz invariance, the scalar couples to the trace, right? So if now the interaction is mediated by a scalar plus metric, if the trace is zero or not zero, is very important. But in this kind of theories, as it is Lorentz breaking, this is not necessarily the case, and it happens that there is no discontinuity in this case. So the only thing we get is that Newton's law is modified. This we made for sources which are static in the ether, in this new preferred frame. Now what you have to do is to compute other things, like for instance, sources moving with respect to this ether, and there's going to be preferred frame effects. But these kind of effects, as Ted and other people emphasize, are of this order, 10 to the minus 7, 10 to the minus 4. Okay, this means that lambda or alpha must be of this order, okay? Now, for cosmology, the only thing we can say is about homogeneous cosmology, and that the Newton's constant is modified, in this case, with respect to the local Newton's constant, and the ratio from nucleosynthesis must be of this order, 10 to the minus 2. Okay, so the worst constraint we have is this, TPN, still to be computed, but TPN, and with this constraint, the cutoff of the theory, as I said at the beginning, there is always a cutoff in this. Okay. If you compute this diagram for the new mode, this goes with p squared over a here a constant. Okay. So this is always is going to be at the scale where this is important. This must be modified. There must be something appearing here. Okay. Unless you want a strongly coupled theory. But in this case, this is 10 to the 15 GeV. That means that the new physics should be there. Okay, and this, because I don't say the conclusions because I just go through them.
And I prefer to go through the open issues, which are, as maybe was emphasized yesterday, I was not here, unfortunately, how to recover really Lorentz invariance in the infrared, right? Because some people here presented, it's not natural to have these small parameters that you need, okay? I think that being able to put it in a Stuckelberg or covariant way gives you a new hint how to do it, because now all the Lorentz breaking comes from a scalar. And if you manage to make this scalar with a mass gap, like for instance with the most trivial things you can do not work. I mean, there is no Lagrangian in this family for which this is massless, but maybe some non-linear dynamics or whatever, if you manage to do this heavy, then all the non-Lorentz physics is going to be at this scale, right? So this is, I think that this is something that may happen. I was thinking yesterday about this soft argument about the small couplings, and I think that it doesn't work in this case. We can discuss all this. Also, it would be interesting to see if you can deform general relativity, you can deform the different morphisms to another algebra with the same constraints. I'm not absolutely illiterated in that, but this is an idea. As I said, we need more phenomenological constraints, okay, so these open issues, more. And finally, yeah, I want to mention that a very exciting subject, which is such solutions of black holes. Okay, we have been not playing with this for a while without any result. Basically, what happens here, to our understanding, is that you can find black hole solutions, even if we can't. But because they are the same as in ether-like theories. Okay, so there's black hole solutions, and we were expecting to find a head. This new mode, maybe here for these black holes, maybe this could solve some paradoxes. But the, as far as I understand, the status in the ether theories, which is basically what this theory is in a U1 sigma in a ether phase, is that there's no head for this kind of solution. So black hole thermodynamics may still be controversial. Sorry for the.
One quick question,
Maxim? Yeah, you were very cavalier with all these constraints, but you haven't literally put matter in this background. How do we know that the, speed of lights for different species wouldn't be order one different?
Yes.
Especially if you have such a high cutoff that they need, loop effects involving gravity and speed. Is it obvious that they're going to be universal for all species?
No. I think that this goes to this first issue. How are you able? Of course, you can always do this with a fine tuning. So in a way, you are changing the infinite number of fine tunings that you have in the standard quantum gravity for a finite number, 10^2 fine tuning maybe, which is maybe not very good. So I think that now it's worth to. And I agree that this first point, and I think everybody agrees, is the most important thing to think about. As I said, I think I can even cook up a model where this kind of phenomena happens, but it's not trivial, it's not to work.
Okay.